Hi, everybody, and good evening to you. I'm broadcasting here from my daughter's house in Los Angeles area, moving around a bit, and I'm very happy that you've been able to adapt to this special time. You know, normally we don't do anything, Tuya and I don't do anything GMT on Monday or Tuesday, but this time, well, you know, it was my daughter's 50th birthday, and that only comes once. So, and it was the party was taking place right in the middle of the broadcast, so I had to make a choice there, and I think you can understand after 50 years that it was probably the correct choice. So, thank you for adapting to this. We're working here on the science of triangles. It's a lengthy section of about 100 pages in esoteric astrology. It's not that there is not more said throughout the Tibetans' work on the science of triangles, but this is perhaps the most concentrated section. And as we go, Tuya and I will be extracting other statements, but I'm going to stick to this. It's very, very deep, and in the process, I have a feeling that a lot of you may also learn more esoteric astrology than maybe had been the case up to this point. This is going to take some time. It's going to take some years, maybe 2 years. I'm not sure. But let's just say that I want to stick to this concentrated section, which deals with all kinds of particular triangles and their functions, so that all of us can begin to learn to think in terms of triangles when we look at the structure of the cosmos. If you want even more detailed commentary on what we're going to be discussing, on the Makara website, this is all part of the large work that I did for esoteric astrology 3 years ago. So you can see what is said there. It's never the same. What is said is never going to be the same, but maybe some things will be the same. So if you want to make a really deep study of it, deeper perhaps than we can even go here, with our emphasis particularly on triangles, you can go to Makara and consult the video commentary of the complete book. So this is our fifth program, and it has its own link, Brett tells me, and we're going to, probably in the chat box, is going to be the resumption of our normal link that we have been using. I think that's correct, but anyway, if it's not correct, we have some time to correct it, because the conference is coming up, to which I would really love to invite as many of you as possible. It's in our new, I think, very beautiful venue in Chandler, Old Town Chandler, Arizona, and not too far from where the other conferences have been held for the last 15 years. But because the conference is so demanding on everybody, these particular programs will be suspended until June the 3rd, and then we'll carry on with them probably every 2 weeks or so, generally speaking. And our normal ASK program, the meditations which are broadcast and which Tuya normally gives, will also be suspended. I'm not sure at what time, but we can straighten that up shortly. Well, so as I say, we're dealing with, in some ways, a general course on occultism. I guess, you know, whatever book I'm in, I try to be fairly complete and to, well, it's impossible, of course, but to link up many things that are said with other things that are said in the books. And it's just a small effort, but at least we will know the relationships between, some relationships between what is said and things that are said in other places. So anyway, number five, and we'll have a little meditation later, at least a brief alignment that is going to take us through some of our triangles work, you know. But now this is more the academic side, and we've been talking about the stress and the strain of the present period, and everybody surely recognizes that. We're in a decisive period as far as humanity is concerned. The next 8 years take us through the conclusion of the era of the forerunner, which is preparing for the great hierarchical conclave every 100 years, and it will be in 2025, and will involve Shambhala as well, and an assessment of where humanity actually stands in the type of progress that hierarchy had hoped it would make, and what types of energies can be released into humanity. You know, at that time, we're told that in all probability, the first steps in the real externalization of the hierarchy will be laid down as a plan. So the hierarchy will be emerging as it must emerge before the Christ can come on that great wave of expectation. So we've had a number of reasons, and we're going to review them, reasons for the turbulence of the present moment, which all of us are caught up in one way or another, according to our karma and according to our dharma. And if we ever were going to prove ourselves and what our training in discipleship has meant, this is the time to pull out all the stops, so that whatever you have to offer, whatever I have to offer, any disciple is given as fully as possible, because it's sorely needed as the dweller on the threshold of humanity rises up before the door of the first initiation, and that correlates with the uprising nature that dredges the depths of the forgotten past under Pluto. So it's to be expected at the threshold that Pluto will play a very big role, and it is the planet of death, but you have to see something before you can really deal with it in such a way that it does not continue. So we're going to see many unpleasant things, many repressed factors, many things that we would perhaps would rather ignore, but they're going to be in our face, and we're going to have to deal with them. So as DK says here, I would add here a sixth reason for the present strain and stress in the response of the human family to this world crisis, you know, this Armageddon, because it is related to the entire question of conscious response to subjective forces expressing themselves as ideas, you know, from the Buddhic plane and above, and vast thought currents from the higher mental plane and even from the plane of concrete mind. So astrological forces are involved. They're expressing themselves as ideas and vast thought currents, ray energies as well. And humanity is really a disciple now. Not everybody in it, of course, but humanity as a whole. And humanity is becoming a thinking being. The stuff that's written in red, you know, this is my own commentary about these things. And DK here is in the black, so to speak. So humanity is growing up and can now respond as never before to truly subjective forces. Now, when you talk about a word like subjective, we oftentimes think, well, it's the astral body, well, it's the mental body. These factors are subjective compared to the outer physical plane. But true subjectivity does not begin until we reach the level of the higher mind and beyond. The soul is truly subjective, and everything else below that, though not exactly accessible, is subtle but not subjective. There's a difference, subtle but not subjective. So we are going to be responding to the world of ideas from the Buddhic plane and beyond, and the rays in astrology bring these ideas whose time has come into the area where our consciousness can perceive them and be moved by them. If you think about the old statement Nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. You see what a tremendous force can be released from the Buddhic plane and beyond, and how irresistible in a way it can be. How we respond to it is, of course, up to us, but it will make itself present, and this is a time when new ideas, especially attuned to the Aquarian energy, are being released into the sphere of consciousness of humanity. Okay, let me just, I hope you can hear me fairly well. I try out different headphones, you know, and if it's too soft, turn it up. If it's too loud, turn it down. Okay, so
you're fine.
Am I okay? That was the voice.
Yeah.
That was the voice of God. Okay, thank you. Okay, this is the fact that humanity as a whole is today reversing itself upon the great zodiacal wheel, just as the individual disciple does. And this reversal really means that when the energies come in from above, they usually pass through the higher centers and are expressed below in the lower chakras. Yeah, same for humanity. But at a certain point, the stream of energy reverses itself, and it does not express through the lower chakras, but through the higher chakras. So it's all about energy direction and energy stimulation. It's not necessarily about looking at a wheel and seeing it turn one way or another, though probably occultly there is a kind of a wheel that does turn upon itself when a true state of synthesis is reached. So let's just say humanity is certainly an aspirant in a way. It is a world disciple in a way, and before long it's going to become a world initiate of the first degree, which does not mean that everybody, as a matter of fact, maybe relatively few, but still some millions, will express the first degree, but not everybody will. Still, it will be sufficient to leaven the consciousness of the entire mass. So we are reversing ourselves upon the great zodiacal wheel, and instead of expressing ourselves only through the lower chakras, we are expressing ourselves much more through the heart and the creative throat and the visionary Ajna Center. All of this is gradually developing. You know, look into Cosmic Fire around, I think it's around page 170 or so, and you'll see various triangles of energy which activate themselves or are activated at different stages of human evolution. It's really worth looking at. So as happens for the individual disciple, so it happens for the group disciple, humanity. The point of reversal and the sign or signs in which it takes place mark a momentous point of crisis in the life of this kingdom of nature. We're in that crisis, and you know, as he's told us, Libra, with its ruler Uranus from the esoteric point of view, is often indicating the point of reversal. And Aries, with its power of initiative, also indicates the initiative it takes to start off on a new track and reverse the energy flow. It's really simple in a way. Are we living below the diaphragm, or are we living above the diaphragm, or in some kind of warfare that's going on between two modes of living, above and below? And probably that is true of the aspirant, and the more we become disciples, the more we will be living and expressing above the diaphragm, which doesn't mean that the lower centers totally atrophy. They have to sustain the whole thing. So, you know, Libra, Aries, these are very important signs for this reversal. And we do have at the moment Uranus in the sign Aries, and he tells us that in the planetary horoscope, Libra is going to be more and more important. It's an air sign, after all, and we're moving into the age of Aquarius, which means that Gemini and Libra will be important. So a kind of balance is occurring, and maybe humanity will start raising its energies from the sacral center upward towards the throat and towards the solar plexus, which would be an improvement over simply the sacral center concentration. So anyway, we're in a crisis now, and it's not just of our making. It's part of the initiatory process of the planetary logos, which is part of the initiatory process of the solar logos. You know, go Go to Cosmic Fire, page 384, 384, and you'll see some of this. So anyway, this crisis is producing upheaval. You know, you dig and you bring the soil up to the light of the sun. You see all kinds of things. Upheaval, difficulty, and a whole gamut of readjustments necessitated by the reorientation. Our major reorientation is from the moon to the sun, from the lunar vehicles to the solar vehicle, which we call the soul. And basically, we want to face the east. You know, that's the orient. We want to face the east. And in facing the east, the sun rises, the solar angel rises, our egoic lotus becomes more important, and we're no longer trapped simply in our lunar vehicles, you know, like so many of us have been for so long. So this is the reorientation of humanity as a whole. It is momentous, and all the negative forces want to stop this. You know, they want to stop the divine plan, and hierarchy tries very, very hard to make sure that these negative forces do not get the details of the divine plan. Otherwise, their resistance could be even more effective. So if you add this reason to the other five, you will not be astonished that the situation is today almost fantastic in its difficulty and the extent of its of the involvement. So, well, you know, DK has a dry sense of humor often, and he's not one to exaggerate. So when he's going to use a word like fantastic, this is really a moment, and it is that moment for which the whole hierarchy has been waiting for millions of years, maybe even 18 million years. Creation is in travail and groaning towards a new birth, which is now occurring into the fifth kingdom of nature. So just to review, you know, we have Sirian magnetism. This is part of it, and it's behind all of our initiatory process. We have the change in the axis of the earth, and this may be not only an electrical change, but actually a reorientation. As I pointed out before, why is it that Uranus is bowing with its head center towards the sun? Why is it that Venus has somehow completed a complete cycle and is almost upside down? So the axis of these planets do change over time, and the Egyptian priests knew about this, as Blavatsky told us, and as the historian Herodotus related. So then there's the completion of a 250,000-year cycle back in the time of Lord Maitreya's appearance in the Palestinian region, 250,000 years, and that's actually, that's, you know, let us say, once around the Pleiades. We consider this the hub of the wheel. It takes this whole system of solar systems about 250,000 years to revolve around it. And so the sun entered Pisces by one calculation around 47 BC, but that's not necessarily the great Piscean age that is coming to an end, an age of 25,000 years, and it's coming to an end now, not then. So it was the beginning of a lesser equinoctial age at that time, but the big one, approximately 25,000 years, is coming to an end now. Okay, then also the change from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius, and by the year 2117, as the Tibetan suggests in one of his letters to the psychologist Roberto Assagioli, who was a member of his group, that change will occur into the lesser age of Aquarius, and when the greater age of Aquarius begins, we don't know exactly. But anyway, there's big changes happening, the lesser changes into the lesser age of Aquarius, and the big change into the new type of Platonic year of about 25,000 years, between 25 and 26,000 years, the exact figures are not given to us. Then also number five, the influence or effect of the decaying moon, which gradually will completely disintegrate by the time we reach the seventh round. Now, when we talk about that seventh round, does that have to do with our Earth chain, the seventh round on Earth chain, or maybe a seventh scheme round? Anyway, the moon with its nefarious influence, which Blavatsky describes in horrifying terms, will disappear. And then here we have the last one we just discovered or discussed, humanity's reversal of the wheel, with humanity becoming the world aspirant, even the world disciple, and in some respects, the world initiate. But of course, it's going to take a long time to get everybody initiated into the first degree. It's going to take a long time. In every triplicity, there are three major qualities manifesting, or three basic energies seeking expression. I think you can see this if you look at one of our diagrams, Wheel Wisdom Activity, and here's Atma Buddhi Manas, and here are there are three synthesis petals, but there's also three tiers, sacrifice, love, and knowledge in the egoic lotus, and the personality has the mind, emotions, and generally the body. So there's always three qualities expressing. Okay, three major qualities. As he manifests in time and space, see, of course, triangles are naturally based on threeness, and we're always looking in every triangle for how the three major aspectual aspects of divinity express themselves in that triangle. Okay, as he manifests in time and space, man discovers this to be true and to constitute a law in nature. And it might be said that the task of the disciple is to become consciously aware. Awareness is a big thing, and we don't have much of it, like a detached, onlooking observer. Finally, we discover that the real observer in us is actually the monad. That for, as we retract and disidentify the observer from what is being observed, we finally end up in the monad as that point of being, which is like a great eye and is overlooking everything that happens. So we become that detached observer of these energies and their expressing qualities as they function within himself. So always, our evening review and a kind of meditative practice where we disidentify with what we usually consider to be ourselves and instead observe all those movements, that is leading us eventually to soul perspective, triadal perspective, finally monadic perspective, and beyond. The one becomes aware of the three. The observer is the one, becomes aware of the three. The life of the monad is at the heart of the triangle. Excuse me. This he does in three different steps, upon the path of probation, the path of discipleship, and the path of initiation, wherein he becomes aware first of the activity or third ray aspect, then on the path of discipleship becomes aware of the love aspect, more so, and on the path of initiation of the will aspect. And always he is the observer. So what does he have to do? As the Tibetan describes it, he has to become aware of, number one, the threefold energy, which is the personality, mind, emotions, and etheric physical body. They're really one thing. And of which the vital body is the synthetic expression, because all of these different energies move through the vital body. You have, well, as a matter of fact, the vital body picks up energies from the higher levels as well. So coursing through the ethers and perhaps expressing themselves through the dense physical are a number of energies, but especially for most people, it's mind, emotions, and the bodily energies which are affecting the etheric vehicle. Okay, then we have to become aware of the threefold soul. See, all these triangles are part of the picture. We want to learn how to become aware of all the triangles within us and within the larger macrocosm. We have to become aware of the threefold soul, of which the egoic lotus is the expression. Well, what you can do is you kind of combine the jewel and the lotus with the three Buddhic petals surrounding it, and you can consider that a unity. In which case, that's sort of at the heart of the triangle, and you have, making up the triangle, the sacrifice petals of the egoic lotus, the love petals, and the knowledge petals. There are different ways of counting all this, but that's one way of looking at the threefold soul. If we count the soul and the spiritual triad and the triple monad, we have a six, and at the very center is the point of being, which is at the heart of that Star of Solomon, that six-pointed star. Okay, then we have to become aware of the, and then now he's going to give us a phrase which he says we're not going to understand, so let's see if we understand it. The triple monad, of which a great diffusion in time and space in three streams of creative energy is the expression. So, well, I think it is, you know, difficult to understand. Diffusion may relate to the threefold expression of the monad as the spiritual triad. There's a certain pervasive quality of the monad, which is overcoming time and space, and three streams of energy, will, wisdom, and activity, are found, here they are, representing the monad, and they pervade all things, and that's why when we have real monadic awareness, we are no longer discriminating between subject and object. It's all of it is seen as what we are, and yet we recognize the different aspects within ourselves. Well, the observer has to take all of this in, and there's one way to do it by, you know, staying within the soul illumined mind and feeling that there is an impression from the soul, and there is an impression from the triad, there is an impression from the monad. That's one way to do it. But a higher way of doing it is actually to disidentify in such a way that we begin to rise up into those spheres of awareness, and our focus of observation is within those triangles itself, rather than staying below and waiting for them to impress us. So we do become the soul. We do become, in a certain state of consciousness, the spiritual triad. We do finally, at the sixth initiation, become the monad and are within it, rather than being impressed by it from a lower perspective. So anyway, the triple monad, we have to become aware of, which a great diffusion in time and space covering the entire planet and beyond, in three streams of creative energy, is the expression. And so that's really Atma, Buddhi, and Manas. And now he's telling us that we just really haven't understood what he's just said. Okay. This last definition is somewhat meaningless to the uninitiate, but must suffice. You know, he's limited by a certain kind of language that our mind normally understands. He just really can't go beyond it. He's always dealing with these inelastic things that we call words, as these words work for us in our present state of wordcraft, we might say. We have certain concepts and certain sounds that represent those concepts, and we really need much more than we actually do have. So he says, there is a manifesting aspect in all these triplicities, which is the result of and conditioned by the interplay of the three forces. It's, you know, sometimes you see in a triangle and then below it there's a point to which a dotted line is connected in three different ways. So the three manifest as the fourth. And, from a certain point of view, you can see that the mind, emotions, and etheric body manifest as the fourth, which is the dense physical body. If you want to go up high, you might say that the logoic plane, monadic plane, and spiritual plane form a triangle which manifests as a fourth within the intuitional or Buddhic level. So there's always going to be an area of manifestation where three manifest as one. It is their full expression and the result of their successful activity. That's why we have the dense vehicle. So I guess DK is saying here, there's always a square for every triangle. Personality vehicle, egoic lotus or soul vehicle, and we have the monadic vehicle. The vehicle is the fourth, you know. And from having a nine, if we add all the vehicles, we have a 12. Well, how important is that? But we start, you know, there are three here, three here, three here, and three here. We find that if we add up the points in the monadic vehicle, the points in the spiritual triad, the major points in the soul body, and the major points in the personality, we've got a 12. And in the center of all of that is the 13th. And the 13th is the point of pure being, which is the heart or life of the monad in the center of that 12. It's almost like Christ and his 12 disciples. I guess here the main point, there's always a fourth for every three. So anyway, and that's a there's the point in the triangle, but there's also a fourth, which is the manifesting vehicle in the personality, is the physical body. Okay, so that's the dense aggregation, which is the result of the work of a higher three. In the soul, it is the unfolded central bud within the egoic lotus. And this is a higher kind of thing, this fourth, because we have a fourness there between the jewel and the lotus and the three synthesis petals. So the synthesis petals and the jewel and the lotus together make a four. It should be kept in mind that the three tiers in the bud make a four. And the central bud is considered a factor of manifestation in the soul. So we've gone in a different direction, interestingly. But of course, from another direction, we can consider the entire causal body as a fourth. Now, here is maybe an enigmatic statement. What is this fourth when it comes to the monad? Three forces and a manifesting aspect. In the monad, it is the, and here's an enigmatical statement, it is the sound which geometrically forces itself into the vision of the beholder. That's a very Davic type of statement, a deeply esoteric mode of symbolizing that which cannot be expressed or reduced to the tangibility of form. So we're looking for a four below, we're looking for the fourth above, and I call this the geometrized sound as a factor of manifestation in the monad. So long may we ponder on that particular statement. But you know, when you think about it, God geometrizes. And on the plane of the monad, we have the great geometer at work. The plane of the monad is connected with the second ray. And one of the names of the second ray Lord is the great geometrician. Now also, what we have here is called the Akasha, that's what it is. And so there's a sound factor at work on the monadic level, and a secondary factor which geometrizes. So you can see when certain sounds are played, they create certain designs. We've seen that in the work of the researcher. I think his name is Hans Seselier, something like that. Different geometries come out of different sounds. So on the monadic plane, we have a combination here of sound and geometry and form. Seven archetypal forms, and all of us belong to one or other of the seven monadic groups that are found on the monadic plane. Well, you know, these are very abstruse things, admittedly, but okay. Sound which geometrically forces itself into the vision of the beholder, and when it forces itself into the vision, we have a form. This is beyond the tangibility of form. This is what Plato would call the true forms, with a capital F. And these are energy forms, and they are not concrete forms. So let's just say sound and geometry unite on the monadic plane, and of all of this, we have to become the observer. Now, you know, in case you think that this is quite a trip into abstraction, okay, it is. And we have to learn how to think in this way, which is building our access to the abstract mind. In other words, dealing with this kind of material is actually, in a way, building the antikarana. Now, at first, we may not have the words, we may not know what we're really talking about, and so forth, but eventually, all of these higher realizations will become well established in our understanding, and then perhaps intuitions will descend into our consciousness, and through straight knowledge and pure reason, we will see things as they actually are. If students will bring this idea to the study and understanding of the astrological triangles, and of course there are more than just astrological triangles, there are ray triangles too, and will refuse to lose sight of the related triple energies, they will greatly simplify their studies. Now, right now, these studies look pretty complex. And, you know, Master DK, how many centuries has he studied for? And he's giving us the benefit, as much as he can, of centuries, even millennia of deep study. So we can't rush it, but we can realize that we will come into great understanding by studying what he has presented for us. So just looking back here for just a moment, we're talking about what manifests as a result of trepticity, and whether that manifestation is in a vehicle below or some aspect which is above. Always the three will produce a fourth, and thus we will have, in a way, a square. Sometimes the four are above, and sometimes the four are below. Now, if you look here at the cosmic physical plane, the four are above in terms of the cosmic ethers, and the more material aspect is a three, and it's below. But if we look here on the mental plane, we will see that the higher mind is a higher three, and the four are below. Reflecting the cosmic ethers, we have, again, on the physical plane, the four are above and the three are below. So we can never think that, three must always be higher than four. Sometimes four are higher than three. It's the same way when you look at the numbers four and five, which is the higher number. In one way, four represents buddhi, and five represents concretion. But from another point of view, five represents the soul, and four represents the four divisions that we find below the soul: the concrete mind, the astral body, the etheric body, and the dense physical body. So everything is relative, and according to the law of mutation, there's a constant shifting of perspective. Now, it's all a big Gemini thing. You know, Master DK is considered Mercury in a way. And Mercury and Gemini have the ability to shift and see things from every possible angle. And we just have to learn how to be sufficiently fluid to do the same thing. It's the easiest thing in the world to get caught up in rigid concretions. You know, the various Bibles of the world have done that to people's minds. When you combine the sixth ray and the fifth ray in their more concrete aspects, people get entirely rigid and say, this is the truth and that is not the truth, and they have no sense of real relativity. Well, relativity is where it's at. You know, the whole theory of relativity is a cosmic thing, and it's even more than Einstein has proposed. It extends to the whole universe and to all the planes. So we have to, using the third ray, develop a kind of relativistic consciousness, which is very, very flexible, and we're going to see things differently according to the different point of view that we adopt. Always there will be a different perception from a different point of view, and we have not to be so scared and not to be so rigid that we hold on to some concretion, which we say is always so, when in fact it's just the result of seeing from one particular perspective. We have to develop the abstract mind, the higher mind first, the abstract mind next, the transcendental mind next, which is the intuition. We have to develop those things and not just get stuck in that concrete mind. All right, let's see a little bit more perhaps. Obviously, you see that we could go on for years with a discussion of general occultism that is suggested as we read these very deep words of Master D.K. In some sense, he's going to be very abstract, and in other sense, he's going to give us very, almost concrete examples of how the zodiacal, planetary energies, and even the energies of the greater constellations are combined to condition what's happening to the Earth and what's happening in our lives. Okay, if students will bring, yes, they will greatly simplify their studies. This idea of the triple manifesting as a fourth, the related triple energies, usually the three aspects of divinity, resulting in a fourth. Now, you know, you kind of wonder, does the fourth hang from the three, or is the fourth above and the three hang from the fourth? And I think you can find examples of both. The microcosm, when known, now this is something, right, holds ever the clue to the macrocosm. As above, so below, you know, we can say it glibly, but how often do we really function under the law of analogy, the great interpretive law of the universe, and use the law of correspondences, which is even a more precise mode of applying the law of analogy. So we've got to know ourselves if we're going to know the world, the bigger world. And strangely, when we can get some kind of clue about the bigger world, the macrocosm, it may reveal something that we had completely overlooked in our immediate self. So we have to be fluid. We look from below to above and from above to below. The macrocosm eternally reflects itself in man, the microcosm. And hence, man has within himself the possibility and the potentiality of total comprehension. You know, when I think about Master D.K., somehow I think about the great second-ray planet, Jupiter, in a great second-ray sign, Gemini, this sign of understanding and resolving the pairs of opposites, the sign in which inclusive, fluid mind can reign. But, excuse me. Okay, maybe just a little bit of water here. Okay. Right. So this is a very important idea, and we actually have to work with it. You know, when you're reading through a treatise on cosmic fire, you're going to just get stumped. You're going to run into something that's hard to understand. In that case, pull out the law of analogy and see if you can use what you do know to give you insight into what you don't know, because the relationships will be similar, if not exactly the same. You know, he says, don't push the analogy too far. Okay, don't push the analogy too far, but at least there is a sufficient similarity to understand. All right. Therefore, in all the many triplicities which we shall study, you know, we're studying the signs of triangles, right? So a lot of triplicities, we shall find correspondences to the monad, soul and the personality and mind, in other words, to ray one, to ray two, to ray three, the three rays of aspect. We shall find one line of the triangle embodying determining and dominating force at different times according to the law of nutation, because triangles revolve. And two lines, which during a particular cycle are conditioned by it. And there's a constant revolution of triangles so that a different dominating force takes the higher place. And the two lines which are conditioned by the dominating force are always changing. Sometimes one's on top, sometimes two's on top, sometimes three's on top. So you can understand what a tremendous thing we have to study in terms of the science of cycles. At a certain point, all knowledge will be ours. It'll, you know, we'll have a certain kind of consciousness on the third level of the atomic plane. We'll probably be masters. Well, you never have all knowledge because it's totally universal. But I think within the certain sphere in which you are confined, all knowledge will be ours. For instance, you have an interesting illustration of this in The Nature of Fire, esoterically understood, in its triple expression in time and space during the cycle of manifestation. For as you know, the ageless wisdom teaches that there is, and we're familiar with this, and maybe not this particular adverb, electric fire, its will, it's the monad. It's called initiatory fire. Without the first ray, there is no real initiation. Solar fire, it's love wisdom, and it relates to the soul, and it comes by the name, very interestingly, of qualificatory fire. So the major qualities are revealed by the second ray, and there are seven. And then fire by friction, which correlates with activity. Can I get that together? I don't know. And it relates to the personality, and we call this purificatory fire, and it is relating to the mind. So at different times in the development of the human being, let us say that the top of the general triangle will be different. At first, it's going to be fire by friction, and the greater fires are subject to it. You know, Jonah is swallowed by the whale, so to speak. Then there comes a period of time, relatively shorter, when the soul is in control. And not yet are we wielding electric fire, but we certainly are surmounting fire by friction. Then comes the great period leading beyond man, when electric fire dominates. It's a very, very long period. And both the soul and the personality, the second and third rays, are subjected to the first ray aspect within us, and the monad reigns. A great triangle describing human progress over millions of years has rotated, we might say. And there are all kinds of little triangles that are rotating according to their own cycle. Now, what those cycles of rotation are, well, you know, these are going to be secrets of initiation. All we can do is content ourselves with the general principle that there are triangles in rotation, and either the first, second, or third aspect is going to be dominant at certain points in the development of the entity, which is represented by that triangle. So what I've said here is the emergent forces within a triangle are time conditioned. At different times, one or other of the three aspects rules. And in general, you know, when you look at the triangles in your etheric body, at first, the third aspect rules the triangle, then the second, and then the first. But although that's the general pattern, according to your monadic ray, whether it's largely the first, second, or third, so will be some interesting variations in that rotation. Obviously, second ray people will develop the second point of the triangle with greater ease than the others. Third ray people, the third point with greater ease, and first ray people, the spirit point or monadic point with greater ease. So maybe we can begin to get an idea of the incredible relativity that we're dealing with under this law of mutation, which is very much a Geminian law. And remember, Gemini is the third sign, so it has a lot to do with triangles. Everything is in flux. Everything is rotating. Everything is in constant, ordered, and lawful motion, at least on the higher planes. And as we ascend into hierarchical knowledge, these kinds of understandings will come to us. Well, I think, I know I'm not exactly racing through this, but we are coming to a new section, the Triangles of Energy, and we're going to study the great triangles and then lesser and lesser triangles. So this is the, if I can be clear here, this is the end, of academic reading in the Science of Triangles program number 5. And we've gone up to page 415. Probably we only did one page, I don't know. But anyway, page 415, and our date here is the 2nd of April, 2017. I'm keeping some of the old markers in purple so I can distinguish between them. And let's see where we actually began, what page we actually began. You know, it's always we began on page 413 of Esoteric Astrology. Okay, so now when we come back here, we've acquitted ourselves fairly well. A couple of pages we've studied. So, pages 413 to 415. And we'll begin again. Gosh, Brett, when do we begin again? What's that? Oh, you know, June 3rd. So now we have a long break. Long break for conference. Where again I invite you, you know, it's, I believe, a very valuable experience, resuming on June 3rd of this year. Okay. So, and then we begin with Science of Triangles number 6. I think we're going to have a very deep study here of the Science of Triangles. Now, this does not at all, the complexities of this study do not at all affect your working with the triangles in a simple, spiritual, loving, lighted way. You know, you form your triangles, you work with your fellow soul-infused personalities. You don't have to worry about all of this heavier material. You just spread love, goodwill, and eventually the will of the good through the triangles network. That's another thing. But let's just say that as we learn more and more about triangles, in a way it cannot help but deepen the work that we do within the general triangles network. Okay, so now if there are questions or comments, this is the time that we can look at them, deal with them, and I think I see Carl. Go ahead, Carl. Yeah, okay, I see your hand is up, and I've just unmuted you, and you can speak now if you wish, or if you have your, you know, computer turned up high enough. We had an issue with that before. Just make sure that your computer has sound when you try to speak. Okay, or if you have a question, you can write it out if I can't hear you for some reason. Okay, but anyway, I'll try to stay alert, Carl, to what you wanted to say, because I know the hand is going up again, but I can't do anything else except unmute you, which is what I have done. So if you wish to speak or you wish to just go ahead, and if you wish to write something, you can go ahead and do that. Okay? And, you know, they're a nice group of us here. I have to say, you know, that here I am in California, and I well realize that in New York it's 2 a.m, and in Chicago it's 1 a.m, and in Denver it's at midnight. So I don't doubt that the majority of our people today are from Europe and from Australia and New Zealand. You know, that's how it is. Tui and I, we alternate between 5 a.m. and 5 p.m. so that we can give everybody a chance. But, you know, if you've missed a program, Brett puts them up on Makara and lets you know where they are, so you can just go there. And when you're free, you can pick up the program and, you know, perhaps engage with it and see if it's of value to you. Okay, friends, your thoughts? Let's see.
We have a question.
Jeremy. Okay, Jeremy O'Neill. Oh, I wonder if it's the Jeremy I knew in Mississippi, but maybe not. There was a Dr. O'Neill who was really interested in the PIP, and I'm wondering, I forget the first name. But anyway, how do I understand between the law of correspondence and law of analogy? Okay, I understand that the law of correspondences is much more exacting than the law of analogy. The law of analogy gives you an idea about general relationships between two sets of relationships on different levels of expression. But the law of correspondences works out in the detail rather than just in the general structure of relationships. And sometimes it works out in very exacting detail. But we always have to be careful not to push either analogy or correspondence too far just because it would satisfy our mind to do so. There are always little differences that, you know, I'm thinking about this, holistic, what's it called? You know, when you have these, it's kind of a holism in which the greater is reflected in the lesser. And I'm not thinking exactly of the word, but the whole idea is that the lesser form is a bit more blurred than the exactitude of the higher form. And that lesser form is going to reflect itself in a still lesser form, and a certain blurring again occurs in the relationship. So we have to be careful not to strain analogies or correspondences, but in general and very simply, I say correspondences are more exacting, more detailed. They are like rigorous analogies. That's the way I think of them, Jeremy. So, you know, probably not the total answer, but at least I'm giving you what I understand by it. And, you know, if you read Cosmic Fire carefully. Thanks, Jeremy. If you read Cosmic Fire really carefully, boy, he compares different atoms, the solar atom, planetary atom, man, the atom, and the atom of matter. And sometimes those correspondences are really rigorous, and you can notice them. But other times the analogy is a little, it's more general, and he sometimes tries to alert you to that. You understand something of the similarity, but not with exactitude. So let us, D.K. knows a lot of exactitude, but he's a little careful not to give us too much because we can become overwhelmed. Certainly every one of us as a student has had our moments when we just have to close the book because we're overwhelmed, okay? But the idea is keep coming back to it, and it will always make more and more sense. Thanks, Jeremy. Thank you. Other thoughts? I know this seems a long way away from just doing your triangles work. And maybe when you compare the importance, doing the triangles work is more important than what we're doing. But this is going to expand our knowledge of occultism and the implications of triangles throughout our solar system and cosmos will come home to us. And we'll see how utterly pervasive this science of triangles really is, even though, in a way, it's just giving us the ABCs, okay? Okay, Carl, are we back? Can you speak yet? There's something wrong with the microphone setup. I think we ran into this the last time. I don't know what happened, but, and if you can't, just write a question, you know, just write a question and it'll be okay. or a statement or comment. You know, it doesn't have to be questions. It could be just something you think. Okay, is there anybody else who would like to say something, ask something? Like I say, I'm always willing to offer you my point of view, even though I realize it may be very incomplete compared to what Master DK might say. Okay, well, you know, we're embarked on a deep study here. I mean, you know, you could study. I'm always amused, you know, Master DK said the books he wrote would suffice for one generation. And then I had to ask myself, what kind of generation does he mean? Because I can see that there's things there that only a fifth degree initiate could absorb and understand. So maybe it's like a whole wave, a generational wave of students with a certain type of equipment, and maybe it goes forward hundreds of years. I mean, you know, there's so many things in theosophy. Right now, it was given 100, how long ago? You know, 1875 onward, even 1860s with Isis unveiled. We don't understand all those things, and it was given a long time ago, 150 years ago. And there are going to be so many factors that were given by DK in his second installment. We're just not going to understand them, you know, but we'll work at it. So what did he mean by suffices for a generation? That generation, I think, is a certain type of spiritual student equipped in a certain way. And, you know, my big goal here is to help in such a way that we who stand on the threshold of the release of the third installment of Master DK's works from 2025 onward, assimilate enough of what he's already given so that our invocation to him really evokes as full a possible revelation as he deems it wise to give. Because, you know, the more we assimilate, the more invocative we become, and the more we can evoke a higher level of understanding. I think it happened in his earlier teaching with Alice Bailey. He, you know, he has initiation human and solar. Okay, so he tells you about the seven cosmic paths very, very loosely. Then he probably intended to say quite a bit more in a treatise on cosmic fire. And he did. He really revealed a great deal in a treatise on cosmic fire, and that was going to be it. Okay. But later, in his very last book, The Rays and Initiations, for some reason, he decided to go even further in the revelation of the seven or nine, now, cosmic paths. And that is, I think he, first of all, he'd been given permission to do it. And I think he'd been given permission to do it because humanity's mind had so grown that it became sufficiently invocative to evoke still further information. So what Master DK deems as suitable to give to us in this third installment has a lot to do with how well we assimilate what he has given. I consider it a very exacting responsibility, which we must take seriously. It's not just business as usual. We are preparing for the next revelation, and at the same time, we are trying to prepare humanity's consciousness so it becomes increasingly invocative and can evoke what it needs to rise into the first initiation. Okay. Okay, well, then it may be that that's all that we want to say at the moment. And although, you know, like I say, Tuya gives on Wednesdays a broadcast, which is really our triangles meditation, I always like to end even this study period with a little bit of that. So at least we strengthen the triangles network together in our own little network, even though it might be just one triangle, we strengthen it together. So if there are no more either statements or questions, written or spoken, then I will get on with a little meditation. It's very nice to see you all here, really. I really see Europe represented, and I see Catherine there from Australia, and maybe some others, I don't know, and South Africa and so forth, you know. It's on the other side of the world, but you're never left out, because whatever we may discuss here, and even if it's at a bad time for you, you can pick it up later on Makara, okay? www.makara.us. Okay, so let's just have a little alignment and closing meditation. Yeah, let's do that. So here we are, you know, some maybe 23 of us, something like that. We're, you know, located in Europe, maybe a little bit in the United States, not sure, and in Australia or New Zealand. Just in the silence for a moment, we feel our connection. And the possibility of the mind held steady in the light of the soul for each one of us and for the group. And each one of us, I suppose, really has or will have soon at least one triangle we work with. Just, you know, make yourself open to attracting two other people, or maybe you already know who they might be, and you ask them, do they want to participate with you as soul-infusing personalities in the light of the soul to spread light and goodwill and eventually the will to good through a triangular structure? So the first thing we do is just imagine our own little network of triangles, or even one triangle, however many. Just take a few moments to, I know if you have a lot of triangles, we can't name them all right now, but to visualize your little network, and if you can, name the personnel in your triangle and feel the light and the goodwill flowing. You know, sometimes if you work with another person regularly, suddenly a third point will appear. And you'll know that you're meant to try to evoke that person into cooperation with you. Light The light of the soul through the mind held steady in the light. Light animates our triangle of triangles. And goodwill, which is love in action, animates our triangle of triangles. Helping other human beings respond because of these subjective currents. They don't even know why, but it helps them. And eventually the will to good, if we know the divine plan and purpose or something of it, that will. Maybe the time is not yet, but it will flow through the triangles. And we connect our own little network, whether it's one, several, or many, to the great global network of triangles that we envision. Our own little bit strengthening the general network, which glows with light. And within it all, there is the Christ in his hierarchy, as if in the very center of the triangle encompassed earth, sending out the hierarchical light . The hierarchical goodwill, love is goodwill, and eventually plan and even purpose, eventually, which we will to carry out. So we're all part of this, and we're striving to deepen our participation, the depth of feeling and the intensity of will. You know, this is what makes the triangle effective. Goes all the way up to the Buddhas of activity and the Shambhala, and is a great saving network that must, this work must go on, says Master DK. So tune in with us on Wednesdays, you know. Wednesdays, I think we've got the morning schedule coming up, so it may be evening for you, but tune in on Wednesdays for working specifically with Tuya and the Triangles Network with the images that help. And we will just close our work together with let's see here, I think I just want to find the great invocation. And there we go. Okay. And we'll say this aloud wherever we are. You will be on self-mute, of course, or muted. But wherever you are, we say this aloud. And as we do, we visualize our own little network and the greater network. And we know that we're in this for life, and certainly for the next 8 years. And that's just the beginning. We've got to do this. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. We want to thank you very much for attending this sort of a impromptu webinar, the time of which had to be changed for the reasons that I explained to you. And then this is Monday GMT, and on Wednesday GMT, Tuya will lead the actual and usual triangles meditation with music and so forth. Has a whole a special quality, so I hope you can join us. As a matter of fact, I hope you can join us for the Ask program in general, because we're doing Master DK's meditations on the reappearance of the Christ and attracting money for hierarchical purposes, and the triangles, the work which must go on, and the work from the destiny of the nations, invoking the soul of nations. Last time we did Gambia. I think it's just amazing every time we do a new nation, whether that nation is developed or not yet fully developed, there's, you know, you just are helping to draw out the soul in those particular areas and affecting large groups of people. And then, of course, on Fridays, we have our glamour, dissipation of glamour meditations. Now, as I say, since the conference is coming up, some of those will be suspended for a while, but you will have a chance to tune in on the conference. You know, we're going to be broadcasting quite a number of the lectures and other things that are going on. So that will be coming to you, the link for all that. Brett, have you got anything to say about that yet? How are we doing on that, or do we have? Are we just in process?
We're in process of setting up, signing up for the streams at the moment.
Okay, that's good. Well, we'll be letting you know. We'll be letting you know.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, obviously it's best if you can come down to Arizona and show up in person. It's wonderful. And, you know, with your brothers and sisters in the soul and all the exchanges that take place, you know, the different groups you may be member of, the Blue Rose Sisterhood group meets there, and a number of other groups of astrologers and rheologists and all that. It's great to be there in person, but if you can't do that, then we're going to give you the opportunity at least to see, we hope, and hear the work of the pre-conference and of the main conference via the internet. Okay. Well, all right, friends. I guess that's it for the moment. Thank you very much for being here. And Carl, we got to do something about that microphone there. Looked like he wanted to say something, and I'm all ears, but it wasn't working out. So let's just see what we can do about it. Okay, everybody, this will be posted before long. on Makara, please let your friends know about our work, your spiritually inclined friends. And with the broadcast, we have no limit to the number of people who can tune in. And with the webinar, there's a limit, but we're not close to that limit yet. We can get 100 people on, and it'd be great to do so. So please spread the word. We're in that era of the forerunner, and we've got to spread and teach the knowledge of the ageless wisdom wherever we can find a response. So lots of love to everybody. We'll see you before long, and join us this Wednesday for the Triangles broadcast. It'll be 5 p.m. GMT. Wait. Is it morning? Morning time. 5 a.m. GMT. I think I'm right to you. Is that correct? I think it's the a.m. time coming up. I hope so. All right, just check your schedule, the two you prepared for you, and you'll be able to do that. Okay, bye-bye, everybody, and all the best. Thank you. We'll see you. Bye-bye.